Okay. It's taken us a year and a season, five seasons, to complete this series. And now that we are here at the end, I'm really going to miss it.
Aw, you're a little bit sad, huh?
I'm really going to miss it.
Tear in your beer.
Right. Let me introduce us first. Hello and welcome to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. We're both here. And what we are crying about is the end of our Transistor Days series. Today is show number 62. We've covered the theme of this, of what the show is meant to do, which was to convey the best of the top 40 music from 1955 until 1969. 15 years, and we've done it. It's taken 62 weeks, but we've done it. And like, I was definitely not looking forward to our last show in this series. It has been so much fun to get here, and I'm gobsmacked that it took 62 weeks for us to do this.
Crazy.
But I enjoyed each and every show. I'm sure you did too. And if you've been listening and you've been a part of it, I really hope you've been having as much fun as we have. Nevertheless, all great things come to an end. And this is our final show in the Transistor Days series. To explain it simply, we were covering the time when people would be listening to pop music on AM radio, which usually meant a transistor radio. And that ended when FM began to take precedence. And that happened almost exactly as 69 turned into 1970. So we truly hope you enjoyed this as much as we did. And as the 60s drew to a close, one thing that's really obvious in this show is that something completely different stood on the horizon, which is what this show helps to convey. And also, it kind of makes it easy for us to explain the end. The first track up in this series is a track by Thunderclap Newman called Something in the Air. I mean, whew, talk about just making it. It was on the charts for only 2 weeks in late 1969 and then gone, peaking at a very unimpressive number 37. For its time, though, Something in the Air was utterly appropriate. It was a disheveled but righteous, self-righteous way of thinking that occupied our consciousness. And it's nowhere put better on display than this confused classic. This was a populist anthem, drifting somewhere between the desire for rebellion, because the revolution's here, and you know it's right, and brotherhood. We've got to get it together now. I mean, this song makes a valid argument for the theory that rock and roll was a primary catalyst for the social unrest that defined the 60s. Rock and roll was a popular medium that thrived on rebellion. Yeah, our parents were right. And it was only a matter of time before revolution became fashionable, provided, of course, that rock and roll remained fashionable. Well, the causes and concerns of the anti-war movement, not to mention anti-racism and the feminism movement, were deadly serious. Pop music, rock music, had a way of taking this ideology and sugarcoating it so it could be more easily swallowed. This song embraces brotherhood and revolution simultaneously without any apparent sense of contradiction. It must have been the 60s. Still, it's the last great moment of 60s belief in revolution and brotherhood. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Thunderclap Newman with Something in the Air.
Because the revolution's here.
By the way, that track was produced by this guy with a really big nose named Bijou Drains. It was actually another name for Pete Townsend, who was responsible for that. Now, this is another band with like a really crazy story. They were called the Glenwoods. They had a recording contract to put down a whole bunch of songs. They were talented musicians. They had an entire album finished, and they even had a single picked out. And they didn't want to waste one of their album tracks for the B-side of the single. So they were pretty much like inclined to say, oh, let's just make something up. And so they put something together. They didn't even have words for it. And they just threw it down, figuring it was going to be a throwaway B-side on the backside of the next Beatles, you know, because they were going to be famous. And what ended up happening, as it always does, is that some DJ flipped over the record and said, I like the B-side. And it was the B-side that became a huge hit. And go figure, all of a sudden, they had to make up, I mean, well, they already did make up a band name because they originally called themselves something different. But when the single came out, they called it Steam, basically because they were trying to not promote the album yet. It's confusing. Even I'm confused. In the meanwhile, the song becomes one of the biggest hits of late 1969. On American Radio 90.3 WHBC, the fictitious band Steam performing the song with no words. Na 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 na, na 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 na, hey hey. how strange it is that a band that works so hard on putting out what they consider to be a perfect album, and we know none of that. I mean, I've never heard another song.
Should look it up.
I know. I really should. I haven't bothered because, I mean, obviously, like, you know, hit singles, it's always about happenstance. And it's almost like there was, like, very little thought put into that because of, like, you know, it breaks down to the drums. Things are very simple. But that's the way it worked.
It has energy, so.
It does. And it's a great song to hear. You know, it makes everybody want to sing. It's amazingly huge in, like, sports arenas when you're trying to basically, you know, wave off your competition. All right. So once again, we have a song that symbolizes the end of a golden decade. Okay. The demise of the Supremes coincided with the end of the 60s almost exactly the way that the Beatles did. The void left by the absence of both of these groups meant that pop music would never be the same. It's noteworthy that both of these acts, with virtually nothing in common except that they were contemporaries, they broke onto the scene at almost precisely the exact same moment, went on to dominate totally different genres, the Motown sound on one side and virtually everything else on the other, for the remainder of the decade, and then they simultaneously collapse. One very exciting era had clearly ended, and a new, very confusing one was about to begin. On American Net Radio, 90.3 WHBC, here are the Supremes with Someday We'll Be Together.
Yeah.
All right, so it's if you really want to talk about the 60s versus the 70s, this is a perfect way to, you know, basically kick an end to it. We've already said goodbye to the Beatles, really, last week with Come Together and Something, and now we say goodbye to the Supremes, the two biggest bands of the entire decade. The band that marked the transition between the 60s and the 70s, though, I think ideally are represented by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And rather interestingly, they pop up here at the end of the 60s with one of the best two-sided singles of their career and, you know, putting them into like the league of, say, the Beatles or the Beach Boys as far as, or the Rolling Stones for that matter, for like having like an amazing two-sided single. Mm-hmm. On the A side is basically, you know, Down on the Corner, Willie and the Poor Boys, which is this, I mean, obviously John Fogerty likened his own band to that, you know, the street corner buskers who'd play for a nickel if you had one or for free if you didn't. But then again, at that point in time, his band was earning thousands of dollars per appearance. But the fantasy appealed and their down-home sound enhanced their image. There were obviously professionals who were very much in demand, but Down on the Corner kept that image down to earth. Mm-hmm. What's amazing is the B-side, the other half of Down on the Corner. From the perspective of the performance, John Fogerty has what is probably the most potent rock and roll gargle in the music business. But he makes sure you understand every word so that he doesn't want to blur the content of his message. He's enraged, but he's careful in what he says. And what he says, only he knows that he can defend it. Some folks are born, made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue. But when the band plays Hail to the Chief, oh, they'll point the cannon at you. An amazingly brilliant double-sided single by Creedence Clearwater Revival at the end of the 60s. We'll start with, of course, Down on the Corner, and we'll finish with Fortunate Son on Americanet Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Happy feet down on the corner, out in the street.
around this time, I don't know how you could not love Creedence Clearwater Revival. They were just, I mean, John Fogerty, what he's saying
there. The relevance of that song never.
Will never die. I mean, my God.
Will never die.
Right? It's just so fantastic and perfect. Now, both of those songs together, combined, equal the length of the next track. And it's Neil Diamond. Now, Neil Diamond had an interesting career, you know, doing the whole thing with songwriting in New York City with Jeff Berry and Ellie Greenwich and trying to basically get, you know, find his own sea legs and all that. And of course, he became very famous writing songs for the Monkees. He wrote I'm a Believer and he wrote A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You. So his reputation as a songwriter of merit was very well established. By 1969, I mean, now he's down in, of course, my favorite place on the planet. He's at Memphis's American Sound Studios. And when he was there, he recorded Brother Love's Traveling Show and Sweet Caroline. So, of course, the biggest hit of his career happened down there. Now, one other song that he recorded when he was there was Holly Holy. Don't ask me what it's about. I cannot even begin to explain the lyrics. It's really kind of insane. But he recorded this song, which is so much a gospel song. And he ended up going up to New York where he overdubbed strings and a gospel choir. And it borders on the inspirational, even though I can't tell you even a clue of what it's about. I don't know. Maybe I don't care. It's beautiful. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, Neil Diamond with Holly Holy. rather incredibly, that song came right on the heels of the Edwin Hawkins singer's Oh Happy Day. And I don't know, it kicked it up a notch. Although, like I said, I have no idea what he's trying to say. I just don't understand what Neil Diamond is trying to convey at all. But whatever, it's beautiful. Meanwhile, okay. God, it's so hard to convey so much happening at the end of the decade. But the Guess Who were releasing singles now at a steady bit. And all of a sudden, they're actually charting in America. And Randy Bachman himself has said that this next song is his favorite song from his time as a member of the Guess Who. I don't blame him. The band did so much so well. There was so much that was great about what was released by them. But the song Undone is often forgotten, and it was a top 40 single, and it's great. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here are the Guess Who with Undone.
Found what she was headed for. It was too late. She's come undone. She found a mountain that was far too high. And when she found out she couldn't fly, it was too late. It's too late. She's gone too far. She's lost the sun. The truth, but all she got was lies. Came the time to realize, and it was too late. She's come undone. She didn't know what she was headed for. And when I found what she was headed for, Mama, it was too late. It's too late. She's gone too far. She's lost the. The sun, she's come undone.
If ever there's a song that's going to convey the end of the 60s, I mean, think of it. That's it. It's like saying, whoa, you know, guess what? You did too many drugs. You're a head case and we don't even get you anymore. I mean, that's what that song is about.
Is it?
You know, she's come undone. Okay. It's so amazing how things almost line up too perfectly to make the point. But the next track is by The Band. And, you know, The Band capitalized on the late 60s, I think, by making music that was literally of the earth. No useless echo of reverb or feedback, no gender swapping imagery, just straightforward imagery of Americana. Other bands were lost in the stars. The Band was squarely on terra firma. They had a sound that was simultaneously nostalgic and modern. And Up on Cripple Creek was so perfect because you get this accurate portrayal of the characters. You can envision everything to the point of perfection. You can almost see their clothing. You can see the wooden table and the half-empty whiskey bottle, the wind-up Victrola in the corner. You could probably see the 52 Hudson in the driveway and the landscape that surrounds the rustic shack. These aren't characters in a song. They're tangible people who live inside of a short story. You can almost smell them. That's how perfect this song was in 1969. The Band with Up on Cripple Creek on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
This living off the road is getting pretty old. Bessie again. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She means me, I don't have to squeak. She defends me, a drunkard's dream, if I ever did see one. No, 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 no.
Okay, it's kind of sad that we've come this far, but I want to squeeze in one great miss, and it's somebody who I don't want to hurt. It's, you know, Mama Cass Elliot. She, in 1969, at this point, she was really struggling for relevance, to say the least, and this song is just so outside of any point of relevance that, especially in the 60s, that it hurts. It's called Make Your Own Kind of Music. Now, soon after this song was put out, she died. No, I can't stand the stupid rumors about saying that she died on a, you know, choking on a sandwich. She was in England. She died. She had a heart attack, and she died in the exact same apartment that Keith Moon died in.
Oh wow!
If you figure that, and you know, and they died like, you know, soon after one another. History is not the way that you've heard it. It's just that this song is Cass going out in a way that is...
Is it what you would call a swan song?
No, that's just what's sad about it. It's not. It's awful. And, you know, she was so important in the 60s, but she ended up not finding relevance with what she was putting out. But nevertheless, here is Make Your Own Kind of Music by Cass Elliot on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Nobody can tell you there's only one song worth singing. They may try and sell you, 'cause it hangs them up.
So we end our 62 show series with two songs that I think actually convey the 70s more than the 60s, but they both are part of 1969. So it's kind of perfect in that regard. I could go on and on about the Jackson 5 and the history, but we'll save that because we got plenty of time to go there. But the first song up from December of 1969 is the Jackson 5 with I Want You Back. And immediately after that, from December of 1969, is Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love.
Wow.
What's more 70s than that?
Wow.
And yet, technically, 1969. On America Radio, 90.3. What did I just say? On American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Here are the Jackson 5. And, of course,
Led Zeppelin.
Back to back. Thanks, folks. New series next week. Bye-bye.
Baby, I'll be learning. I'm